"Did you put your name into the goblet of fire, Harry?" Dumbledore asked calmly.
"No," said Harry. He was very aware of everybody watching him closely. Snape made a soft noise of impatient disbelief in the shadows.
"Did you ask an older student to put it into the goblet of fire for you?" said Professor Dumbledore, ignoring Snape.
"No!" said Harry vehemently.
"Ah, but of course he is lying!" cried Madame Maxime.
Snape was now shaking his head, his lip curling.
"He could not have crossed the age line," said Professor McGonagall sharply. "I'm sure we are all agreed on that."
"Dumbledore must have made a mistake with the line," said Madame Maxime, shrugging.
"It is possible, of course," said Dumbledore politely. "Dumbledore, you know perfectly well you did not make a mistake," said Professor McGonagall angrily. "Really, what nonsense! Harry could not have crossed the line himself, and as Professor Dumbledore believes that he did not persuade an older student to do it for him, I'm sure that should be good enough for everybody else."
She shot a very angry look at Professor Snape.
"Mr. Crouch, Mr. Bagman," said Karkaroff, his voice unctuous once more, "you are our objective judges. Surely you will agree that this is most irregular."
Bagman wiped his round, boyish face with his handkerchief and looked at Mr. Crouch, who was standing outside the circle of the firelight, his face half hidden in shadow. He looked slightly eerie, the half-darkness making him look much older, giving him an almost skull-like appearance. When he spoke, however, it was in his usual curt voice.
"We must follow the rules, and the rules state clearly that those people whose names come out of the Goblet of Fire are bound to compete in the tournament."
"Well, Barty knows the rule-book back to front," said Bagman, beaming and turning back to Karkaroff and Madame Maxime, as though the matter was now closed.
"I insist upon resubmitting the names of the rest of my students," said Karkaroff.
He had dropped his unctuous tone and his smile now. His face wore a very ugly look indeed.
"You will set up the Goblet of Fire once more, and we will continue adding names until each school has two champions. It's only fair, Dumbledore."
"But, Karkaroff, it doesn't work like that," said Bagman. "The Goblet of Fire's just gone out. It won't reignite until the start of the next tournament."
"In which Durmstrang will most certainly not be competing," exploded Karkaroff. "After all our meetings and negotiations and compromises, I little expected something of this nature to occur. I have half a mind to leave now."
"Empty threat, Karkaroff," growled a voice from near the door. "You can't leave your champion now. He's got to compete. They've all got to compete. Binding magical contract, like Dumbledore said. Convenient, eh?"
Moody had just entered the room. He limped towards the fire, and with every right step he took, there was a loud clunk.
"Convenient?" said Karkaroff.
"I'm afraid I don't understand you, Moody."
Harry could tell he was trying to sound disdainful, as though what Moody was saying was barely worth his notice, but his hands gave him away. They had balled themselves into fists.
"Don't you?" said Moody quietly. "It's very simple, Karkaroff. Someone put Potter's name in that goblet, knowing he'd have to compete if it came out."
"Evidently someone who wished to give Hogwarts two bites at the apple," said Madame Maxime. "I quite agree, Madame Maxime," said Karkaroff, bowing to her. "I shall be lodging complaints with the Ministry of Magic and the International Confederation of Wizards."
"If anyone's got reason to complain, it's Potter," growled Moody. "But, funny thing, I don't hear him saying a word."
"Why should he complain?" burst out Fleur Delacour, stamping her foot. "He has the chance to compete, hasn't he? We have all been hoping to be chosen for weeks and weeks. The honour for our schools, 1,000 galleons in prize money. This is a chance many would die for."
"Maybe someone's hoping Potter is going to die for it," said Moody, with the merest trace of a growl.
An extremely tense silence followed these words. Ludo Bagman, who was looking very anxious indeed, bounced nervously up and down on his feet and said,
"Moody, old man, what a thing to say! We all know Professor Moody considers the morning wasted if he hasn't discovered 6 plots to murder him before lunchtime," said Karkaroff loudly. "Apparently he is now teaching his students to fear assassination, too. An odd quality in a defence against a dark arts teacher, Dumbledore, but no doubt you had your reasons."
"Imagining things, am I?" growled Moody.
"Seeing things, eh? It was a skilled witch or wizard who put the boy's name in that goblet."
"Ah, what evidence is there of that?"
said Madame Maxime, throwing up her huge hands.
"Because they hoodwinked a very powerful magical object," said Moody. "It would have needed an exceptionally strong confundus charm to bamboozle that goblet into forgetting that only 3 schools compete in the tournament. I'm guessing they submitted Potter's name under a 4th school to make sure he was the only one in his category."
"You seem to have given this a great deal of thought, Moody," said Karkaroff coldly, "and a very ingenious theory it is, though, of course, I heard you recently got it into your head that one of your birthday presents contained a cunningly disguised basilisk egg, and smashed it to pieces before realizing it was a carriage clock. So you'll understand if we don't take you entirely seriously."
"There are those who'll turn innocent occasions to their advantage," Moody retorted in a menacing voice. "It's my job to think the way dark wizards do, Karkaroff. As you ought to remember."
"Alastor," said Dumbledore warningly. Harry wondered for a moment whom he was speaking to, but then realized Mad Eye could hardly be Moody's real first name. Moody fell silent, though still surveying Karkaroff with satisfaction. Karkaroff's face was burning.
"How this situation arose, we do not know," said Dumbledore, speaking to everyone gathered in the room. "It seems to me, however, that we have no choice but to accept it. Both Cedric and Harry have been chosen to compete in the tournament. This, therefore, they will do."
"Ah, but Dumbledore!"
"My dear Madame Maxime, if you have an alternative, I would be delighted to hear it."
Dumbledore waited, but Madame Maxime did not speak. She merely glared. She wasn't the only one, either. Snape looked furious, Karkaroff livid. Bagman, however, looked rather excited.
"Well, shall we crack on, then?" he said, rubbing his hands together and smiling around the room. "Got to give our champions their instructions, haven't we? Barty, want to do the honours?"
Mr. Crouch seemed to come out of a deep reverie.
"Yes," he said, "instructions. Yes, the first task."
He moved forwards into the firelight. Close to, Harry thought he looked ill. There were dark shadows beneath his eyes and a thin, papery look about his wrinkled skin that had not been there at the Quidditch World Cup.
"The first task is designed to test your daring," he told Harry, Cedric, Fleur and Crumb. "So we are not going to be telling you what it is. Courage in the face of the unknown is an important quality in a wizard, very important.